With the new round of U.S. sanctions on Russia expected today, how will Moscow respond? And a shakeup at the world's biggest ad firm. This is the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Wire and plastic products, otherwise known as WPP, the advertising mega giant that owns ad agencies, market research firms, and yes, even wired household goods, faces a new chapter after its founder and CEO Sir Martin Sorrell announced his resignation this weekend following an investigation into his possible misuse of company funds. So what's next for WPP? Bob Whitten is founder of the consultancy Deconstruction.
Any sell-off of WPP's assets will revolve around two things. First of all, money. If WPP finds that it needs to re-bolster its balance sheet somehow, then a disposal could be one significant tool in its armory. Whoever they decide to bring in as their new chief executive will have a tremendous operating disadvantage against Sir Martin, who's assembled a business over 33 years. Anybody who walks in their first 100 days is going to have to learn the same amount of information, which is colossal. So you may well find that an executive comes in and looks at the business with a helicopter view and goes, actually, I'm going to rationalize and integrate and reconfigure and sometimes divest and bring this spider's web into a more manageable shape.
How has that digital advertising landscape disrupted WPP's?
Google and Facebook, of course, have developed the long tail of business advertising. For example, my wife is a self-employed, freelance, sole trader, florist. She could not possibly have been an advertiser in a previous world, but she has built up her business almost entirely, as it happens, through Instagram. That hasn't had a great deal of impact on the ad agencies because the long tail was never looking for an ad agency at its costs and its fees, and the ad agencies, it wasn't viable for them to do business with them. But the middle of the body, not the tail, and the fat end, the big advertisers, of course, remain.
The FT is reporting that Martin Sorrell would be free to compete with the company he built and led for 33 years. Do you think there's much chance of that?
He could be quite a formidable competitive force, but does he actually want to compete all over again? It's one thing starting up a business of this scale and scope at the age of 39 or 40. It's another entirely when you're 73 and you've already been there, done that.
Bob Whitten, let's do the numbers. European stocks are little changed as oil prices fall on expectations. The weekend's missile attacks in Syria will not mark the start of greater Western involvement there. Meanwhile, China's major indexes saw their worst day in 3 weeks on worries that slowing credit growth and tighter regulation will weigh on the economy. The U.S. is considering a third round of sanctions against Russia today, targeted at companies with equipment that might be linked to chemical weapons use in Syria. Russia's deputy foreign minister this morning said Washington is demonstrating open economic aggression. But James Nixey, head of the Russia and Eurasia program at the London think tank Chatham House, says there's not a lot that Moscow can do to retaliate.
Russia's options are quite limited here because Russia is on the defensive all of a sudden. In recent times, before the attack on Syria, before the Skripal affair, if you like, Russia has been on the front foot and the West has largely been on the back foot. But now the tables are turned and economic reprisals on the part of Russia will indeed hurt Russia more than the West, simply because Russia is the 13th largest economy in the world and the US is the largest, and it's very hard to beat up on a giant in that respect. The other thing that's very difficult is military confrontation, because then that, again, ups the ante in a way unacceptable to both parties. So Russia does have advantages asymmetrically in other areas of what is sometimes called hybrid warfare. Cyber warfare, for example, the Russians are proficient in that, and it's relatively risk-free as they see it. Energy cutoffs is another one. But I think that financial sanctions and military action are areas where Russia would deem it to be self-harm. Having said that, then Russia does indeed engage in self-harm at times, and it's already produced counter-sanctions on the sanctions, which indeed do hurt the Russian economy.
So do you think the economic pain is going to bring about the kind of political change that Washington and other allies seek?
To be perfectly honest with you, I think very few people would believe that sanctions will cause President Putin and the Russian government to put their hands together and say, I'll come quietly, Governor. What sanctions are is, firstly, they're a symbol of displeasure, dissatisfaction at Russia's actions which are contrary to Western norms. Secondly, they are designed to limit its room for manoeuvre in the international system. But actually changing policy, and I think Russia is a long way from that, because not least partly because the sanctions are not anywhere near the same level of magnitude as the sanctions on Iran were. And Russia can withstand an awful lot more than Iran can.
James Nixey. China's microblogging site Weibo has reversed a decision to remove all gay content after a backlash from users. The BBC's Celia Hatton has more.
It was a rare online protest in China, and it appears to have worked. After Weibo's sudden announcement it would purge all gay content, tens of thousands of the platform's users posted their reactions. Some posted rainbows or photos of their same-sex partners, or simply the hashtag, "I'm gay, not a pervert." Weibo relented. The site, which functions like Twitter, said it had now decided to exclude gay content from an ongoing purge of material deemed to be violent or pornographic. It's a small victory. China decriminalized homosexuality more than 20 years ago, but gay people still face widespread discrimination.
Celia Hatton reporting there. Finally, red faces today at Nestle as the Queen's Grocer, the iconic London department store, Fortnum & Mason, beat the Swiss confectionery giant to the market with its blush pink ruby chocolate on Friday. Nestle's red Kit Kats debut today. Don't forget, you can catch up on all the latest global business news with our podcast. Grab it wherever you get yours. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.